next guest. He's certainly one of a Roadhouse favorite and one that we can thank our lucky stars for connecting with tonight. Bob King is the mild manner photo editor for the Duluth News Tribune by day, but perhaps his greatest fame comes as the cosmic creator of the AstroBob blog, a treasure chest of astrological information online. His latest project, however, is a pretty and handy guide entitled Night Sky with the Naked Eye. It attempts to take a look at the mysteries of the universe for anyone simply looking up, beaming into us now from our galaxy, but a city far, far away. Bob King, welcome back to the Roadhouse.
Oh, thank you very much. That was sure a fun introduction.
Well,
oh, thank you.
Occupied a great deal of my afternoon putting together, Bob. So it's the creative genius that we share. And you have been busy, my friend. In addition to your regular updates to AstroBob and, of course, your work with the Duluth News Tribune, you've got a great new book out, Night Sky with the Naked Eye. Tell us a little bit about what inspired you to write this book and put it out to the masses.
Well, actually, I was asked to write the book. I didn't go out and seek a publisher, but a publisher went and contacted an editor at Universe Today, which is a place that I write for online. It's a really nice astronomy site. And that editor, they asked her to write a book about space missions, and then they were seeking someone who would write about the night sky and what we could see. And she recommended me, which is very kind of her, and so I started the project last fall.
Yes, certainly an indication of your the esteem that you're held in the community. It looks like kind of a beginner's guide, which I put myself in that class, and yet you are probably a beginner or amateur astronomer for most of your life in that hobby. Is this book that seemed to be the target audience? It's like anybody's guide to astronomy.
Yeah, I haven't written too much about astrology, so no, I'm sick with the other astronomy. But anyway, it is I consider it a beginner's guide. I think someone who, you know, age range, hard to say, maybe 12 years old and up or something like that. But I just try to explain all the really cool things that you can look at and then explain a bit on how to find them and also give readers a little information about them so that when they go out and look at these objects, they can appreciate them more and also find things that they may never have thought to look for in their lives, maybe just weren't aware of. I'm a real believer, even though I do a lot of observing through the telescope, I'm a strong believer in the power of the naked eye to see so many things.
Well, and I've got an 8-year-old and a 4-year-old, and it certainly appealed to them as well. The photos in this book are amazing.
Yeah, the pictures. I mean, that's it, too. There are a lot of photographs in there, and that's partly because, I love photography, being a photographer, having been a photographer. I wanted to make sure the book had beautiful things in it, too, beautiful images. And so it does have that, along with star maps and diagrams that hopefully will help people to find things in the night sky.
Well, astronomy, like any great hobby, seems to have a language of its own. The book's full of colorful expressions and explanations of phenomena. I particularly like the belt of Venus, scintillation, moon dogs, and the Ponzo effect. What are a few of your favorite astrological terms and why?
I really like, that's another aspect of the book that's maybe different from some guides. Is that it goes into weather, some of the things that you see at night while you're out looking at the stars, such as those halos and moon dogs and these beautiful little colorful disks around the moon called corona. And I love those things. It's one of my favorite things to see or unusual things would be a pollen corona. And I bet people have seen them and just not recognized them before. That's where you have a corona that forms around the moon, these little colorful circles, but it's not round. It's kind of diamond-shaped, and it's caused by light scattering off of fine pine pollen in the air. So that's just one example.
Well, that's funny. I had that same reaction to that information was, I've seen that. I just never knew where it was coming from before.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, fun so effects.
I'm just the guy that's trying to push people out the door a little bit. You know, just go out there and have a look next clear night. Of course, clear nights have been pretty scarce, I know, in the Duluth area and probably up the shore as well.
Yeah, what are the three bad omens for any astronomer, aspiring astronomers? What do you got to look out for?
What are the what? The three bad omens?
Yeah. You mentioned the three. So what gets you every night?
Well, the thing is clouds, of course, but they teach patience and then joy once the sky clears and you're able to see those things that you want to. And then there are mosquitoes, which is one of the bad things at night, but you can develop a tolerance of them. And obviously, you know, going out at the right time, you can avoid some of that. But I don't know, I just sort of endure like so many of us do on those nights because the beauty of the stars is it just shines strong enough for me to keep me out. And, you know, if you see a beautiful northern lights display while you're out, the last thing you're thinking about is mosquitoes or humidity or any of that. You're just transported into the night sky.
Yeah, it makes it all worthwhile. You got to suffer a little to see that sensation. And now,
I think so, sometimes.
In addition to the amazing facts and photos, and the one that struck me as profound was how much space junk we've got up there. Right? Is this true?
Yeah.
Is this true? 500,000 objects?
There's a lot of stuff up there. It's true. There's a lot of it is small. A lot of it you don't see. It's too tiny, you know, it's faint. But there are some things that just wheel by every single night. And a lot of the extra satellites you might just see when you go out, especially on a summer night, you know, when the twilights are long. A lot of those things are rocket stages. You know, when they send a satellite up, sometimes that final stage also goes into orbit. So there's nothing really functional there, but it's just a piece of junk rolling around in space. Sometimes you can even see those flashing, too. And I do talk about flashing satellites. So,
well, that...
Go ahead.
That actually leads me to a question as to, like, because there's more and more stuff up there, it's burning up, it's flashing, it's, you know, your book touches on all these great man-made objects you can keep an eye on, including the space station. We'll go there next. But now when people are reporting aliens and crazy things from the sky, do you think it's all these satellites and all this space junk burning up? I mean, is there a correlation over the amount of junk we got up there and more reportings of phenomena?
That's hard. I guess that would be hard for me to say, but I think the more people know about phenomena in the sky, the fewer aliens and UFOs that there would be tempted to call. You know, you would see maybe something bright or a crazy flashing object, but if you know that that's probably a tumbling satellite, you wouldn't first leap to the idea that it might be a UFO or something like that. So,
is there an agency that checks my report, my amateur call in, if I were to call you and say, oh my gosh, there's something in the sky? Is there the strategic command that's going to be able to say, oh no, it's just a satellite?
A hotline to somewhere in Wyoming?
Well, we've got the strategic command's tracking all that, aren't they?
They are, and they've got it down. I believe, don't quote me for sure on this, but I believe it's objects 4 inches and larger, they track everything.
Yeah.
Because they have to alert the space station. Mm-hmm. And if there's something coming, you know, within a few kilometers expected of the space station, then the space station can shift itself from position in orbit and get out of the way in time.
Wow.
So, yeah, that stuff has to be tracked all the time. And you're right, it's always falling back into the atmosphere, but it takes a long time for some of that stuff to come back down and burn up. Mm-hmm. Meantime, we keep sending more satellites up. So, mm-hmm. You know, we keep a steady amount of trash up there in orbit around the Earth. Plus, useful things, too. Weather satellites, communication satellites, the space station, and so on.
Hey, great segue, Bob. Lots of news around the space station lately. You got a blog report today, in fact. December looks like a good month to see this thing from the naked eye. Talk about some tips.
It's just dynamite. It's a great month for the space station. Everything, just about every single night through December, we will have a pass for certainly the Midwest, northern Minnesota, and so on. And you can check on the blog. Just go to the blog today. Just type in Astro and Bob, two words, in Google, and then look at that first blog. It's about the space station. And I've got some links in there where you can get an email delivered to your mailbox, you know, whenever there's a good pass. You can also download, I've got links for Android and iPhone, to download a space station app, and it will alert you and show you just the path. It's amazing what you can do with apps. And that's some of the things I discuss in the book, too, is how to use apps.
Oh, yeah, it's super modern in terms of talk about the different operating systems. You've definitely got some recommended apps, and those are all, and it sounds like they're linked in through your AstroBob blog.
Yeah, I do have a number of those just sitting on the blog as links, too, so you can always go there.
Great.
So it's an interactive sort of thing. If somebody reading the book really has a question, like I'm a living human being, they could just go to the blog and they could put a comment in there and ask me a question, and I'm happy to respond.
Yeah, that's great, Bob. We're talking with Bob King, the living AstroBob blogger and author of Night Sky with the Naked Eye, a great new book for beginners and any star watchers, I think, who truly enjoy a great read and creativeness and explanations about all things overhead, taking the mysteries out of the universe. I'm Dave Chersig. We're here at the Roadhouse, and we had some discussions of space stations. I see yesterday the Russians lost a supply rocket.
Yeah.
Now, what's what? I see Japan's going to send one up. My question to you, Bob, is how long can these guys go without a rocket?
They're in fine shape. They don't wait. You know, unlike when I get groceries, you know, I wait till the last minute, then I go shopping on the way home from work.
Sure.
These guys have lots of stuff in the space station. They can go without for some time.
But what do you think they would run out of first?
Oh, man. I don't know. Big Newton? ice cream.
Chocolate and coffee.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, definitely not coffee.
That's what
They would. But, yeah, they only have to wait an additional week. You know, December 9th, assuming the Japanese spaceship, cargo ship, makes it up safely. They should be in good shape. I know there was fuel, and they always are sending up spare parts and, you know, they're busy up there working, doing science, and so they need stuff shipped up to them regularly.
Oh, yeah. It sounded like tons of gear. And that had to be a great loss. Is that stuff insured? Do they offer, rocket insurance?
Yeah, there is rocket insurance for sure. I don't know how it goes with Russia, though, because that was one of the Russian spacecraft that was going to be sent up, cargo ship. So, but it's a huge loss of money, you know, and, of course, when you have a problem like that, you got to stop and look over everything carefully once again before you send another cargo ship up. You don't want to lose a second one or a third one.
Yeah. Well,
so it could delay that end of things for the Russians.
Yeah. Well, that's the conquest of space. Good things take time. It took a while to get this, and you'll have to help me on the pronunciation, the Schiaparelli probe. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, darn good.
What happened? What happened?
The computer on board, because this all has to happen autonomously. It has to happen without anybody there, because it's in real time as it's coming down through the atmosphere, the probe.
Mm-hmm.
And the computer on the probe has a program that's supposed to tell the engines to fire and the parachute to detach and all of this. Well, the computer started the sequence too early. And so it went through all of these maneuvers while the lander was still plummeting towards the surface of Mars. So the retro rocket, all that stuff was shut off and done with, and then the thing just fell.
Hmm.
It did it too early, and it fell and it crashed and possibly even exploded when it hit the surface. Because, from fuel.
Well, but, you know, but I saw they were trying to spin it as like a, you know, we actually were just testing out to see if this would work or not. And actually, this is good news. We know it doesn't work. It sent us some data to tell us this. And
I know it is.
Don't worry, we're going to try in another 2 years.
Yeah. It's too bad it had to work or not work so calamitously. You know, it was such a tragedy.
Well, we learned from our mistakes.
We do. And, I mean, that's how space is. And Mars is just unforgiving as far as trying to land on it. The only country that's managed to do it and succeed for more than a few seconds where the landers land and work is the United States so far.
Oh, there's something we could be proud of.
Yeah, it's really.
Good stuff. Well, let's get back to the night sky for our naked eye. And what's going on? We just had the supermoon. That was amazing. Well, what's going on this month for meteors? You had me on an alert.
There's a little meteors. By the way, one other thing about the book, just that people listening know, tomorrow afternoon I will be doing a book signing over at the bookstore at Pitkers here in downtown Duluth. So if anybody happens to be coming to Duluth and would like to get a copy, I'll be there. And I'll also be giving away a small number. I don't have tons of these, but I'll be giving away meteorites too. with each copy of the book.
That's so, incentive, Bob. What time's that at?
That's from 12 until 2 at the bookstore at Fitgers.
Great stuff.
And I've prepared some Odessa meteorites, or iron nickel meteorites in Texas. Small samples for people
cool.
who buy the book. But I'm sorry, you asked me about what's going on.
Well, there's a meteor shower next week, or a week and a half?
Yeah, we have a twofer going on next week.
It must be the holidays.
The night of December 13th at 14th, we have a meteor shower, and that is called the Geminid. And it is the richest meteor shower of the year. You get about 100 per hour normally under a dark sky like you see up in Grand Marais. But we got another problem here, but maybe it's a good problem. The moon is full that very night. And this is the part you're not going to believe. It's also a supermoon.
Well, I thought that was last month.
No. That was the super duper moon. this is a somewhat super moon.
Pretty good moon?
It's pretty good super moon. No, wow. Last month it was full moon right very close to when the moon was at its closest to the Earth, all right?
Yep.
This super moon happens with the moon close to that spot and not quite as close. So it'll be about 1,500 miles further away. Still fits the definition of supermoon. Still will be larger than normal, but not as big as November's.
Wow.
So that's a kind of a double event happening, but it will cut down on the number of meteors that you'd be able to see.
Sure. Moon glow, huh?
Yeah, you get that moon glow.
Well, let's just hope it's not cloudy.
Can't have it all.
Yep.
Yeah, well, by the 13th, you think we would have earned the right to have a couple of nights of clear skies here. It's been so cloudy lately.
Yeah, it has been. Tough for astronomy, but good for book consuming, reading books. And your new book, Night Sky with the Naked Eyes, is a great read for a cloudy day or a dark night of clouds. And then get out there when it clears and see all this great stuff you got in your book, Bob. Thanks so much for sharing this with us. It sounds like I might be making a trip to Duluth tomorrow. Fitgers Bookstore starting at noon. You're going to be signing copies of your new book, giving away little souvenir meteors.
Little souvenirs, yeah.
Are they meteors or asteroids? You always have to tell me that.
Oh, they're meteorites. Okay,
meteorites,
so they're little
okay.
pieces. Yeah, a meteor is what you see. That's the streak.
Okay,
and a meteorite is what lands on the ground if it's big enough to make it through the atmosphere. So these are meteorites that landed in Texas. They're very small fragments from a much larger meteorite that landed in Odessa, Texas. That's the name of the crater.
Nice.
Thousands of years ago.
Nice.
So I've got some fragments of it.
All right,
yeah. Bob. Really cool.
Good stuff. Good luck with the book. Thanks for joining us on the Roadhouse.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you so much for having me, too.
Clear skies ahead.